This podcast has been generously sponsored by Svi Hirschfield's inspiring mother, Joanne Hirschfield, in memory of their loving husband and father, Seymour Hirschfield, Zichron Livracha.
Looking back at that bitter, challenging moment on your journey, because that's what happened to the Jewish people, how did you reframe it to find it sweet as a blessing?
This Pardes Life is an original podcast production from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, please visit www.elmad.pardes.org. ELMAD.pardes.org.
Hello, everyone. This is Zvi Hirschfield, and we are doing another episode of This Pardes Life. Today, it is my honor and privilege to have my dear friend, teacher, mentor, colleague, sports antagonist, Rabbi Aryeh Ben David, who himself was a teacher at the Pardes Institute for 26 years?
20 years.
20 years, and is a well-known author and educator. He's written on the Parsha. He's written on Jewish education. And a number of years ago, he founded an organization which he leads called IECA, which I've had the privilege to participate and benefit from, and he'll talk about that with us a little bit as well. And most exciting for us right now is he has authored a commentary on the Haggadah, not your, you know, run-of-the-mill type, but rather an educationally guided and interactive type of Haggadah that reflects his educational vision and mission. And it's available, and it's out there, and it comes highly recommended. So welcome, Aryeh Ben David.
Thank you, Zvi.
Okay. Thanks for that long answer there. So we're going to begin. I've asked Aryeh to select a couple passages from the Haggadah that he finds particularly meaningful. We're going to discuss them together, and then we're going to go deeper and deeper. Okay, Aryeh, what passage have you chosen for us today?
You know, before I jump into the passage, I want to just take a moment to correct my dear friend in Chevruta Tzvi about this Haggadah, because there are so many Haggadot out there, and this one has a different intent and is written in a different style. Tzvi said that I wrote a commentary on the Haggadah. Fact is, there are already wonderful commentaries out there. In every bookstore and most homes on their bookshelves, there are dozens and dozens of wonderful commentaries. There's the Rav Soloveitchik commentary, Rabbi Nachman, Rav Cook, the Hasidisha commentary, Shlomo Karlbach. There are dozens and dozens of commentaries already existing on the Haggadah with a lot of wise comments. This Haggadah is meant to evoke your becoming a commentator. This Haggadah is really a workbook Haggadah with 40 trigger questions and comments that will evoke the reader becoming his or her own commentator. And this is the one commentator that really, in my eyes, is the most important one for Seder. You know, the rabbis instruct us that everyone should see him or herself leaving Egypt. And I felt very often that at the end of the Seder, I know how this great rabbi leaves Egypt and this commentator, but I personally didn't feel that I had gone through an experience. So that's the goal of this Haggadah. And let me share a moment or two or a commentary piece or two from it to give you an idea.
Great. Let's do it. Which part of the Haggadah are we going to look at together?
So there's a famous phrase in Haggadah, "Bechol dor v'dor omdim aleinu l'chaloteinu." In every generation, someone rises up to destroy us.
Which is really not a very happy feeling, sitting at the Seder reading
right.
That.
As if we're thinking, you know, that we went through a bad time, but we escaped, we were liberated, and now the good times roll. And in fact, no, it's worse than that. In every generation, someone rises up. The slavery in Egypt, the persecution, the tragedy, was not a one-time historical experience, but in fact, happens to us in every generation, including the very generation we are living in.
So, there you are at your Seder, and you come across this passage, and you want to feel happy and good and optimistic and positive, and the Haggadah seems to tell you the opposite, that the struggle is going to keep going. What do you do with that?
So here on our page, in this Haggadah, there are 15 what I call hope givers. And here's one of the hope givers, and I'll read it to you, and it'll culminate with a question that we want everybody to reflect on. As if our suffering in Egypt were not enough, At the Seder, we proclaim in every generation they stand up to destroy us. Ugh, really? In every generation? There is no smooth and easy road for the Jewish people. In our own lifetimes, we've experienced war, terrorism, and anti-Semitism. According to the Haggadah, these hardships and disasters will never end. We are bonded with adversity. Yet the Haggadah also promises that God will rescue us from the forces of destruction. The Jewish people will survive. Our entire history demonstrates that deliverance comes just when we think all is lost. And here's the Ayeka, the Haggadah's question. Did you notice any moment in the past year when you felt the hand of God helping the Jewish people? Again, did you notice any moment in the past year when you felt the hand of God helping the Jewish people? Now, I want to unpack this question here. We take this very prophetic and challenging comment in the Haggadah, "Behol dor vador omdim aleinu l'chaloteinu," and this Haggadah wants to make it personal, meaningful, right now. So the question begins, did you notice any moment in the past year? Not someone, not a commentator, a poet, or a rabbi, but did you notice any moment in the past year? And we want to make it right now, contemporary, meaningful, in the past year, not in the Jewish history, in my grandparents' time, in my great-grandparents' time, I heard in the Middle Ages. No, for us, right now, that's the question. Behol dor vador omdim aleinu l'chaloteinu.
How would you answer that question?
Did I feel any moment today of helping the Jewish people?
Yeah.
I, in a sense, living in Eretz Yisrael, I do feel this all the time. You know, I feel it being in an island surrounded by some of the richest, most powerful countries in the world, depending, you know, proclaiming they want to destroy us. I felt it in the last war. I feel it walking today, being able to walk the streets of Jerusalem with much less fear than 10, 15 years ago. I feel it, you know, with my boys in the army, in battle units, you know, rising and coping with very difficult circumstances.
So let me ask you a question.
I want to add two more things to this, this question that I think is important for our Seder experience. You know, so many people have asked me, you want to make it personal. You want to make it personal. I mean, isn't that just another exercise in today's narcissism? It's all about me. What is the Seder to me? What is leaving Egypt to me? It's all about me. So I want to do two things. I want to make it personal, but still in the context of the Jewish people. So in the question is, did you notice any moment in the past year when you felt the hand of God helping the Jewish people? Not just my personal moment of clarity and redemption and hope, but did you feel any moment that God helped the Jewish people? And the fourth element in this question, there's personal, there's you, there is right now, in this present time, there's the Jewish people, and another thrust and theme of this Haggadah is that we mention God personally. Did you see any moment that you saw the hand of God touching, helping the Jewish people? I have found as a Jewish educator, it's astonishing to me that we, the Jewish people, brought God to the world, and I have found now that it's the one subject that we feel often very uncomfortable talking about personally. So I wanted to ask this question, really, and put it right there on the Seder, because the Seder, the Haggadah experience, is all about our relationship as part of the Jewish people and God bringing us out. And as obvious and central as that is to Seder, I, in my own experience, have found that very often this was not stressed and it was almost absent from the Seder experience. So this is my trying to find my place within the Jewish people in our relationship to God.
Okay, so Aryeh, two questions on that. So the marginally affiliated Jew in Oklahoma City picks up your Haggadah, or he gets it as a gift, and he says, Aryeh, God, I don't know where to look for God, and who are the Jewish people? Like, what's the entrance into that, do you think?
Our entrance, well, in this Haggadah, there are 40 triggers. There are triggers for kids. There are triggers for seniors. There are triggers that are meant for the whole Haggadah table, and there are triggers that are actually meant to be done in a chavrut, in a partnering conversation at the Seder, where we say, please turn to the person next to you. So we give many points of access, of entrance, to having a meaningful experience. There are 40 triggers. I don't expect people to actually resonate, and I don't expect people to connect with all 40. But if we can connect with 5, 8, 10, that's already the springboard for a meaningful Seder. So back to this person in Oklahoma City.
Right. For the person, I want to make it even tougher, right? For the person, I know you've met people like this, where when you bring up God, they make a face, right? The shutters go down, the lights are turned off, and they say, boy, you know, in their mind they're thinking, I don't know what to do with God. I haven't thought about God. No one talks about God. And now here is this Jewish educator telling me God is at the center of what I thought was this very nice family cultural experience.
So I have found, I have encountered countless moments of rolling eyes, of glazed over eyes, of people turning me off when I mention the word God. But it depends a lot on the context. If people sense that there is an agenda, that you're trying to get them to believe or act in a certain way, it is a tremendous deterrent to the conversation. If people sense that you're going to judge them, then it really becomes the end of the conversation. But I have found that when you share openly, personally, and from the heart, and not saying, I want you to believe this, or this is what all Jews should do, or this is the Jewish belief, but when you share, you know, this is my personal experience, then I have found there's a beautiful Hebrew expression, which is really true. Dvarim sheyotzim min alev nichnasim el alev. Words that come out of one's heart go into another's heart. And I have found that people really are thirsty to talk about this question. They're thirsty because one of the very sad things in life, and it's a tragic thing, is that the most important conversations in our lives we will probably never have. Because no one will just come up to you and say, hey, you know, when was the last time you had a spiritual moment? Hey, you know, did you ever have a sense of God in your life? Hey, how are you doing with your gratitude, or how are you doing with your connection to the Jewish people? These conversations will never naturally emerge, but people are thirsty to have quality conversations.
Well, let's pursue that. I want to ask a question about that. I'm even talking about in very religious settings. Why is it at the Seder we're very comfortable talking about how big of a lettuce leaf we're going to eat and how much matzah and where I bought the matzah and how I made my kitchen more kosher than ever before because I set fire to it and then rebuilt a whole new kitchen? How come we're very comfortable having those conversations, but the minute you ask me, where have I seen God's hand with the Jewish people, my stomach tightens up. And I start to feel very nervous. Are we going to actually talk about this at the Seder?
Wow, what a deep question that Tzvi asked. I think there is a lot of hiding going on. We're always hiding. The name of our organization is called Ayeka, which means, where are you? And the first story in the Torah is God asking, where are you, to Adam and Eve? And Adam and Eve hiding behind a tree. And that's not a historical moment or a one-time, one-off moment. We, the human being, we are always hiding. We are always waiting to emerge. And I think there's a tendency in our conversations, and especially in formal Jewish settings, to hide. Because to emerge from behind the tree, to share something personal, is extremely vulnerable. This is my moment that I felt God touching the Jewish people. When I share that, who knows how people are going to respond? We have a reluctance to becoming vulnerable. Now, here's the other side of that. There is no relationship without vulnerability. We cannot have a close relationship without being vulnerable with each other. So what this Haggadah tries to do is have different levels of vulnerability. There are some questions like this, or the question that we ask on Dayenu, right? Dayenu is a national gratitude list. So we don't just sing the song. We don't just celebrate the song. We then ask, on our Dayenu list, on our national gratitude list, what am I grateful for? What things, can I find 15 things that I am grateful this year that happened to the Jewish people? What would be on the Jewish national gratitude list? So that also involves a certain amount of sharing. But then we want to go deeper. So there are three questions scattered through this Haggadah that are more personal. And then we don't invite people to share with the whole group at the Seder night. We invite people to turn to the person next to them and share for 2 or 3 minutes in the privacy of just that twosome. Questions like maror. What an incredibly creative idea the rabbis had to put maror on the table, the bitter herb on the table. But to make that real, I don't just eat it and make a face over the bitterness. I have to experience it. What was my maror moment this year? And so that's a question we ask. On your journey in the last year, what was a bitter moment for you? And then we dip the maror into charoset. And how did you sweeten that moment? And looking back at that bitter, challenging moment on your journey, because that's what happened to the Jewish people, looking back on your moment on your Jewish journey that was bitter, how can you or how did you reframe it to find it sweet as a blessing?
Okay, I want to stop there. I want to ask two questions, but you can't reference your Haggadah in the answers. Are you ready? What do you say to the person like me, a little skeptical, who might say, this isn't what we've ever done in the past. This isn't my grandfather's Seder. This isn't my great-grandfather's Seder. This isn't the Chafetz Chaim's Seder. No one needed this before. Why can't we just tell this story, talk about being slaves in Egypt, eat the maror, move on? Why are you challenging us to personalize?
Well, first of all, I'm not challenging anyone. If somebody is happy with their Seder, wonderful. If somebody wants to run a Seder just like Tzvi described, wonderful. Somebody told me last week, all they want to do with the Seder is sing songs. That's the moment for them. Just sing. So I say, wonderful. For me, personally, it wasn't enough. I wanted something that would be more personal, and I wanted something that would help our conversations stay coherent. I found a lot of times at the Seders that I've been at that somebody would mention a comment and then somebody would mention a different commentary and then someone would share a story and the conversation did not cohere. We were not on the same page. So I'm going to break Tzvi's rule here. I'm going to mention the Haggadah because the most important thing about this Haggadah we haven't said yet. This is a workbook Haggadah that is designed to be read before the Seder.
Uh-oh.
That's the idea here is on every page where we ask a question, there is actually open space on the page. We want to invite everyone at the Seder to reflect on certain questions before the Seder, to write down their thoughts before the Seder. What's the goal in doing that? So that when people come to the Seder, they'll already have reflected on it, have thought about it, and now at the Seder, we can simply go around and share, what was your Dayenu moment? What was your Dayenu moment? What was your Dayenu moment? Or a question for the kids, the wise child. What would the wise child ask today? What did you think? What did you think? What did you think? Or another question in the Haggadah. We know the story. The Jews were in Egypt. There were plagues. We left. We know the story. But if you were to send a text message, 10 words, 140 characters, what would you say on your text? We want everyone to answer these questions beforehand. So when we come to the Seder, we are literally on the same page, and now the conversation can flow. So, Tzvi, why do we need another Haggadah? If somebody is happy with their Seder's, great. I suggest this Haggadah only for somebody who, for whatever reason, is looking for more, is looking for something more personal, more on the same page with people, and something also that can give you hope. Because the subtext of this Haggadah is really to give us hope. I feel that the Seder experience gave hope to the whole world. How many nations in the world have claimed this story as their liberation moment? Let my people go. And so the idea of the Seder, we end the Seder with Shana Haba B'Yerushalayim, next year in Jerusalem. After we've done it all, we still have hope. We're looking for hope. This is the night to fill our hope battery. And I'm going to say something for Pardes that's a little controversial, but I'll say this. We have 364 nights of the year to learn. To learn Torah, to learn about the Exodus. We have 364 days of the year to learn. Seder night is explicitly not a night for learning about Seder, learning about leaving Egypt. If the rabbis had wanted us to learn about it, they would not have said, hey, drink four glasses of wine, bring a mattress, recline on the floor, and eat charoset. That's not the setting for a Seder. That's the setting for an experience. So this night, I wanted more. I wanted to experience something, not just to know it, but to feel it and share it. And if somebody, if this resonates with someone, then our Haggadah is for them. If someone is in the mindset of, you know, how many minutes should I eat my Haggadah and how far do I recline?
Eat your matzah, I think. Not to people eating their
Haggadah. Eat your, right? Then fine. This Haggadah is not for them, and Shalom al Yisrael.
Okay, so you're ready? I guess the question that I know people are going to want to ask, you're going to get smacked from both sides of the spectrum, right? Because people on the right are going to say, the Seder is not about you and your personal experience. It's about fulfilling the requirements of halakha, of Jewish law, or sticking with tradition, connecting yourself to what Jews have done in the past, and so on. All this personal relevance, that is not the agenda for an authentically Jewish religious experience. And from the left, I think someone's going to say, hey, I get what you're saying, personal relevance, personal growth, gratitude, hopefulness, that's all really important. But I don't need a Seder for that. I've got a great meditation on hopefulness from Jon Kabat-Zinn on my YouTube and on my phone, all dialed up and ready to go. What do you respond to both of those claims?
Well, you know, I receive a lot of talkbacks on things that I write, and my response to people is usually, fine, it may not be for you, okay? If people want to smack, you know, okay. But
I'm saying the substance. Let's assume it's asked fine as a question, not as a nasty critique from a person who feels threatened, but a genuine student who says, I'm trying to figure you out and figure Ayeka out, and I can't make sense of it because from one perspective, it seems to be speaking the opposite language of a halachic, traditionally minded religious experience. And from the other end, it feels like it's not staying true to the new spiritual age tradition of just exploring personal relevance and private personal spiritual practice.
Beautiful. So first of all, I wouldn't nullify anyone else's experience. If somebody in the more traditional world wants to have a very halachic Seder, beautiful, fine. I am offering the opportunity for more. It's not instead of what you had, but it's more. The rabbis did say, Chayav Adam lirot et atzmo ke'ilu hu yatza mimitzrayim. Everyone should feel as if they left Egypt. And the Rambam says they have to show that they left Egypt. So it seems like this was also on the rabbi's mind, but I'm not. If somebody wants to have this pure halakhic experience, I'm saying, do that. Great. Wonderful. Here's an opportunity for more. And for somebody who says, but I have this, you know, great meditative experience and I'm very spiritual and I'm already very connected to the transcendent, I say, wonderful. That's beautiful. Here's an opportunity also for more, because that personal spiritual experience becomes deepened and amplified when it's put into a collective national setting. When it's put into not just be here now, be fully present in the moment, but be fully present in the 3,500 years of our moments. Be fully present, not just with yourself and God, but with the collective, the Jewish people. So everything you have is wonderful and more. And now I would add one more comment, which may be a little bit more controversial, that in this spiritual world that I'm also part of and I appreciate, there's a sense often, a mantra often said, be completely present in the moment. Become fully present in the moment. I would tweak that a drop in Jewish eyes. And I would say our goal is to become fully present in the moment. We're good at being in the past and we're good at being in the future. We need to be more in the present, but I would add, become fully present in the brokenness of the moment. Become fully present in the brokenness of the moment, because God created a broken world. We lost the Garden of Eden. We've all led wonderful lives that have elements of brokenness. This is a broken world. And our job as the Jewish people is to heal the world. And I can only become a force of healing when I recognize there's a brokenness in the world. So I want to become fully present in that in order to gather more momentum and determination to heal the world. And I think the Haggadah plays a great role in this. Yes, we had a sparkling, shining moment in our history, and we celebrate it, and we sing, and we rejoice. And we look at B'Shana Haba B'Yerushalayim. We're still not there yet. There's still brokenness here. And so this becomes, I think, the wonderful impetus to rejoice, to get out of any kind of depression over the bad things that happened, to look at our wonderful history, and to gain hope, a deeper hope for the future.
Okay, let's take a look at another quick text to share with us here, something that's meaningful to you, and we'll talk about it a little bit.
You know, we do a lot with Elijah at the Seder. We pour the cup for Elijah. We open the door for Elijah. It's toward the end of the Seder, and I never really got it. I mean, like, you know, we open the door, and like, we really expect someone to come in. Like, what is this moment supposed to evoke within us? So one of the questions we ask is, people, when you dwell on this experience, have you ever had an Eliyahu Hanavi moment? Have you ever had an Elijah the prophet moment? Have you ever had a moment that a stranger comes into your life and does a tremendous act of kindness and maybe even saves you at a certain point? A stranger. Have you ever had that moment? Have you ever been that moment for someone else? So much of our life is planned and controlled, and we want this and we want that, and we're going to plan this for the next 6 months and that program and that. And yet there's this spontaneous, unexpected, mystical moment of somebody just appearing and helping us. And I think that's part of the Seder also, that as much as we work to control and have a plan and do, there's an element of unknowing, of mystery, of just someone entering and helping me that I couldn't have thought of and planned, and it's a total surprise. So we give people a moment to reflect on that personally. Did you ever have an Elijah the prophet moment in your life? Were you ever like that for someone else? And this evokes a conversation that is very unusual, because everybody apparently has had moments like this. And once we realize this, I find this profoundly spiritual, because in a certain way, I call this God's hidden hand emerging in our life. And maybe we noticed it, and maybe we forgot it, but this is a conversation that I think the rabbis wanted us to have at the Seder. Think not just about Elijah, Eliyahu that lived centuries ago, but in every generation, there's a moment like that. When did it happen to me, and how do I reflect on that?
Do you find that when you ask those kind of questions and God is present in the conversation, how do people avoid getting stuck with, well, if I'm grateful to God for helping me out there, I'm also really angry at God because he gave my grandfather cancer? In other words, does that come up? Does that happen when you open up that conversation?
It may come up. It has come up, and that's okay, because that's a real experience, and that's what they're talking about. We left Egypt. What about the first, second, third generations in Egypt who didn't get out, who just died in slavery? This world has had a lot of suffering, and certainly I have no answers for that. I would not offer someone answers about that. What we try and do is create the safe space for people to reflect on the most important issues that the Seder is supposed to bring up, and share that in a safe space. So if somebody were to say, I'm angry at God, we would listen. We Jews, we have a lot to be angry about. We have a lot to be angry about, and we have a lot to be grateful for. And I think this is part of the Seder experience of the matzah of freedom, the charosis of love, and the maror of bitterness. We're not in denial here. And yet we want to move forward, even without a wonderful answer to Tzvi's deep question. We want to move forward with motivation, with hope, and do our small effort to help heal the world. I'm not going to propose answers, of course, to the larger questions here. But the answer is not so much, why did that happen? But okay, this happened. How are you going to take this whole experience of the Jewish people and your life and move forward with hope to heal others?
And I guess you're also saying we can't use these problems as escape hatches to avoid thinking about these questions or trying to build some kind of relationship with God. Like, that's got to be on the agenda.
And again, we want to offer people the opportunities to reflect, to write, and to share. And if a question is simply too personal or too challenging or doesn't resonate with someone, that's fine. There are 40 opportunities here, and at different times in our lives and at different times in our growth, we will reflect and we will resonate with different questions. So if that question doesn't work for you, my suggestion would be let it go.
So I've got two final points for you, one more serious and one far less so. I guess when I hear you say all this, it scares me a little. I feel like maybe I'm going to set the bar very high for an experience that hasn't always been so radically successful in the past. Any way we can manage our expectations going into an experience with these kind of aspirations?
Look, for my Seder, I don't expect, white light to come down from the heavens, and I don't expect, to hear symphonies in the background.
But angels? Do you expect angels?
I'm sitting with angels.
Oh, there we go.
But what I hope for is a sincere experience, a sincere personal reflective experience. That's what I hope for, that the conversation can be personal and sincere, that the chavruta, when I turn to the person next to me, which has been in my past seders, really the highlight of the seders, to have a wonderful conversation with my kids, one of them, several of them during the evening. I want a sincere experience. I want to feel like I am fully present. And I want to feel that we've really dedicated this time to the birth of the Jewish people. So it doesn't have to be, with my family, we're terrible singers. We're terrible singers, so we're not going to make harmony and blast it out. It's going to be off key and it's going to be painful, But what we want is simply to share a sincere experience where we can talk openly, reflect on important things, and not miss the moment.
Okay, but my last question is, if we fill our Seder with all of these deep, important, interesting conversations and make it so transformative, what's going to happen to all the usual cynicism, anger, fighting, and resentment that has come to color so many of our family Seders in the past? What do you do about that? Do you leave a little time there in the Haggadah at the end to write down your worst Seder moment?
At the beginning of the Haggadah, we have a circle which we say, please share, what are your hopes for the Seder? When I used to take my kids out to explore when they were young, we'd get into the car and I'd say, okay, ready? You got 3 minutes now to kvetch. Let's get super kvetching, really kvetching. Let's get all the cynicism and everything. Let's really do it, because the rest of the exploring on our trip, we want it to be with positive energy.
And did that work?
Well, it worked, and it worked for me.
Yeah, I
fetched great. Okay,
you really got it out.
But I think there's a veneer that we wear, a shield that we wear of cynicism. That is a very heavy shield to carry, and we don't really want to carry it. And so this is an opportunity to let it go. Once, when I was doing a program, I said, "This is a cynicism-free zone." And then a 17-year-old boy from New York looked at me and he said, "What? You've just asked me to take off my whole personality. I'm a cynic. That's what I am." I said, "Can you take it off for the next hour? Just that I'm asking." Half an hour later, he wrote a beautiful poem that I still have. I think we want to connect in a thoughtful, sweet, sincere way, but we've created paradigms of interaction, which is cynicism and joking and poking fun. So I love to have fun, but I also am dreaming and hoping about having a very sincere, personal, and inspiring Seder.
And it sounds like the other message here is we need more tools. We can't expect just to sit down with the standard Maxwell House Haggadah and read it out loud and expect great things to happen. That we need more tools. We need to invest more time. We need to set goals. We need to take this as a serious educational experience. And that's a challenge. That's a real challenge. But I guess what you're going to say is, without that challenge, if we don't try and don't aspire, we're not going to get any different results than we got the last time. You know, it occurs to me, a very wise person has said to me, the opposite of faith is not doubt. The opposite of faith is cynicism. And it seems to me this whole project of yours, and I'm going to speak about Ayeka at large, it's a project of faith, not necessarily in the sense of philosophical or theological claims, but this belief that we can grow, that we can change. We are not enslaved to the bad habits or difficult experiences or defensive cynicism that has held us back. But you, Aryeh Ben-David, are a big believer. You're a big believer that we can all do this and we can grow.
I think that's so beautifully said, Zvi, and I think that's really the message of the Seder. We're all on a journey. And there was a point where we lost hope on this journey, and rightfully so. And so the Seder is really about having hope in ourselves that we can grow. You know, in my opinion, the biggest gift we can give to each other, really, is hope and to believe in each other. And the rabbis did us a tremendous service by dedicating this night to hope. And I really hope that it works for me.
All right. I hope it works for all of us. So, Aryeh, if people want to follow up with what Ayeka is working on, they go to the website, they should follow you on Facebook. What do you recommend?
We have a website. We have we put out a book.
How's Ayeka spelled?
Ayeka is A-Y-E-K-A. The theme of what we're trying to do is create a Judaism of becoming. We can all become. So we have a book, Becoming a Soulful Educator. We have a track. We train educators in schools to become a soulful educator. We have a new family track, Becoming a Soulful Family. And we're soon to launch Becoming a Soulful Individual. We have a website, ayeka.org.il. And this Haggadah, if people want, is available on Amazon.
Okay, Aryeh, I want to thank you for your time and your passion and your wisdom, and I wish you great success, not just for you, but for all of us. Thank you very, very much. And thank all of you for taking the time to listen.
This Pardes Life is an original podcast production from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, please visit www.elmad.pardes.org. ELMAD.pardes.org.